a shared responsibility model. We've worked with the governor's office and the Board of Higher Education to create a system that's based on an individual student and their family's ability to pay tuition and the other costs of school. And we basically say any student who keeps up their grades, who works 10 hours a week at least a minimum wage job and full-time during the summer, will be able to afford, because the state will kick in a scholarship, to go to community college without additional costs beyond that level of contribution. And if they're going to a four-year institution, we want to reduce the amount of the maximum amount of debt that they might have at the end of when they get their degree to around $10,000 to $12,000, which is substantially better than where some students are today. We're also proposing a new initiative to pool some money that already is available in the budget and also to create some to raise some new revenue through a recording fee to invest in affordable housing targeted for senior citizens as well as people with mental health challenges and other people who need really stable home environments so that they can live productively and reduce the demand that they place on other services, as well as have personal dignity. Two more initiatives I'll mention, and then it's your turn. We're particularly focusing on investing in prevention. And there are a number of different ways that prevention plays out in public services. Certainly one of them is keeping us all safe. And so we're recommending increasing the number of state troopers available to not only patrol our highways, but also prevent and reduce meth problems and other drug problems before they blow up out of proportion. Another important element to prevention is investing in early childhood education, such as programs like Head Start and quality daycare for families so that they can get back on their feet and be able to be self-sufficient and take care of themselves. And the final initiative that we're emphasizing is a partnership with our counties. We know that many counties are at grave risk because of the federal timber situation. And while we hope that our congressional members are able to resolve that situation, on behalf of the state, we want to provide some cushion in case that doesn't happen. And that cushion comes in two very specific forms. One is to make sure that we protect the K-12 schools, some of which depend on federal timber money, and we will be able to protect them from the possible loss of that money. And the second way that we want to invest in our county partners is through a $50 million fund to match county road department investments so that we can keep the road systems maintained and improved by the counties at least a reasonable level. In addition, we're working with the counties to implement a community corrections change by investing some money that will help the counties be able to fulfill their responsibilities there. With that, I would like to invite you to give us some advice on where you think we hit it right and where you think we should change our opinion. That's what this evening's all about. We will invite people to come up to testify four at a time. We will limit testimony to 2 minutes for each person. And my co-chair will be providing the timekeeping services for us. He will give you a yellow card just to give you a heads up. That means you have 30 seconds left. And he'll raise a red card when your time is up, and it will be my unhappy duty to ask you to make room for the next person so that we can hear from as many of you as possible tonight. We're gratified by the turnout tonight, but I will tell you it is unlikely we will get to all of you if you all want to speak. But we do want to hear from a lot of you and a lot of diverse issues, so we will do our best. With that, I will give my personal thanks to our local legislators here, Representative Sal Esquivel, who is joining us tonight to listen to you, and Senator Al Bates, and a number of people from all around the state. Thank you for having us, and give us your advice. I'd like to call up to the table here Peter Angstadt, Joe Holliday, Bob Bluth, and Ed Talmadge. And I will have on deck, if I might, we've reserved these four chairs in the front row for people on deck. Dee Dee Rickert, James Ward, Susan Harris, and Dan Harris. And when you speak, please announce your name as well so that we have it in our official record. Please begin, and thank you.
You were first one.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll go first since I'm the first name.
Okay.
First of all, welcome to the Rogue Valley. I'm Peter Angstadt, president of Rogue Community College, and we're very delighted that you're here. Rogue Valley, home of great rivers and great people, and we're very pleased that you're here. Couple things I wanted to mention. First off, I'm here to advocate for community colleges and their role in higher education. We are really looking for a budget or a allocation in the area of $529 million, and I know the co-chairs have recommended $458 million. But $458 million really doesn't help us out at all. In fact, in addition to all the cuts we've made this year, close to $3 million in cuts, we would have to cut another $300,000 from our budgets. We try to be as efficient as we possibly can. I like to think of us as a high-performance engine, but as a high-performance engine, we're running with four flat tires and a gallon of gas and a 30-gallon tank. We really could use the additional support. Now, we work with workforce development. We've identified over 700 jobs that our local businesses would fill if they had the skilled and trained workforce. We'd love to help our workforce development and economic development groups with that if we have the ability to succeed. And that's where we're falling short right now, is the funding to succeed. We have some great partnerships down here in the Rogue Valley. We have great partnerships with OIT, with SOU, with our K-12 school systems. We're trying to do everything as efficiently as possibly can. And I think you're all aware that in partnership with SOU, we're putting up a new building in downtown Medford, thanks to the legislature. We really appreciate that. So we are being efficient. We are looking for partnerships. We are trying to blend as much as our talent as possible, but we can't do that without the support. $529 million will get us to where we need to go, and we really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sir. That was one other thing I was going to suggest, and I'm sorry, sir. Applause is wonderful because it helps us understand how much support there is. It also eats up time that someone could use testifying. And since we only have 2.5 hours, I'm going to suggest that you do what we call silent applause to let us know that you support someone, because it doesn't take up any time. And while I am taking up time, I neglected to notice that my colleague, Representative Gilman, is also here from this area, sitting at the dais. And Senator Whitsitt has some of his district very close by. So thank you. Sir.
Chairs Nolan and Schrader and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Joe Holliday. I am the Vice President for Student Affairs at Oregon Institute of Technology. But I am here today as a private citizen, and more importantly, I am here on behalf of the students in our universities and community colleges. I've had the privilege for 5 years to be listening to students. In fact, we have been conducting a series of forums this last couple of weeks to hear student concerns on a variety of issues. We had a forum this week in connection with an accreditation site visit for our 10-year accreditation, and we hear a lot from our students when we give them a microphone. I want to tell you a little bit about what I'm hearing from our students. I also want to mention that one of our students, Ashley Cox, a student in one of our health programs, is also signed up, and I hope that the list gets down to her because she's got a lot to say to you. Here's what I'm hearing from our students. First of all, they're struggling with ever-increasing tuition and fees as our state appropriations shrink. I know that you have a shared responsibility model that made it through the Senate and is in the House. I applaud that. I think it's a great step forward. but the shared responsibility model will not keep costs from rising. Second, what we're hearing from our students is that even though they're paying more and more for their education, they are feeling increasingly that they're not getting what they're paying for. At OIT, which is an institute of technology, we hear from our students that their laboratory equipment is outmoded and in disrepair. Our classrooms are poorly equipped and not conducive to teaching and learning. Our deferred maintenance backlog is large and growing. I'll just close by saying that during our site visit this week from the evaluators from the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities, they left us today, in fact, with 6 recommendations for improvement in order to keep our accreditation. 3 of those 6 recommendations were in the area of capital improvements, deferred maintenance, and a stable budget. So I'll just stop by saying, with all due respect and in acknowledgement of the very difficult task you have in managing multiple budget priorities
for the
state of Oregon, please restore the governor's budget. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Robert Bluth. I'm a Senior Vice President, General Counsel, and Corporate Secretary for the Harry and David family of companies located here in the Rogue Valley. We're the largest employer in Southern Oregon. We take the issue that I'm about to address to you very seriously. I'm here to speak in favor of adequate and reasonable fair compensation for the judges of the state of Oregon. In the audience tonight, there are many judges from Jackson and Josephine County here in support of this position. I will not waste time comparing the compensation level of our judges to other states because you've been given information in regard to that, and quite frankly, it's embarrassing and I wouldn't air it in public. Likewise, I'll not spend any time talking about reasonable compensation for highly dedicated, skilled professionals because they are and they deserve that. I would instead like to focus very quickly on a gap in our judiciary. Our judges come from several different areas of practice, from the criminal, prosecutorial, defense side, from family law, from all areas of practice. There is a gap in our judiciary, and there's not an incentive for them to come there that is represented by legal practitioners who practice on the business side, both business and business litigation. Attorneys with 10 to 15 years of experience, especially those in business and business litigation side, have a background that's unique and different and specialized and benefits business owners when they come before the court. Other judges have other experience. They're, you know, educated, talented people, but there is that gap in experience. The lack of exposure makes things like financial reports, difficult balance sheets, experience in commercial, doing commercial transactions difficult in front of the court. The problem is that a practitioner reached that 10 to 15-year mark when they would have the experience to come on the bench. The compensation simply is not adequate to get them there. We would ask you to fund the judicial system in an adequate way to where judges from whatever walk of life come, but from a business section, it's important to the business community for the state of Oregon for the future, for the present, to have a well-rounded, well-balanced judiciary. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir.
Hi, my name is Ed Talmage. I'm a partner at the law firm of Frohmeyer & Dethridge here in Medford, Oregon. And I have prior experience working within the judicial system as a law clerk 1 year prior to taking my job in Medford. And I'm here to talk to you about 2 important issues. The first one is the judicial compensation issue. The second one is the reduction of the judicial budget by $24 million from $329 million to $304 million. I know from personal experience that the judicial branch of the state of Oregon provides valuable and important services to Oregon communities. I also know that those courts are staffed with highly qualified individuals that serve the state of Oregon at salaries much lower than what they could command in the private sector. I'm also going to speak to you concerning what my colleague, Mr. Bluth, just spoke to you regarding the gap in our judiciary system. If we do not increase salaries for the judges, there will be a lack of judges in the civil litigation area because the compensation is just not high enough to bring them in. We need judges with real trial experience in the areas of medical malpractice, complex business litigation, complex torts. These judges that we have now who have experience in this type of litigation not only provide valuable resources by trying such cases, they also provide a valuable resource in settling them. In other words, they reduce the cost and time that people spend in trying these litigations because they're able to go to a judge who has years of experience trying and dealing with these type of cases and have their cases settled. In addition, if we reduce the judicial budget by $24 million, we will adversely affect the ability for people to have access to the courts. I was practicing law in 2001 and 2002 when the courts were closed on Fridays, when there was a reduction in judicial staff, and it severely affected people's ability to get their cases resolved and impaired the ability of people to conduct business within the Rogue Valley. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Now may we have Dee Dee Rickert and James Ward and Susan Harris and Dan Harris. On deck, I'd like to call Carol O'Neill, Dan Killam, Bill Collins, and Sandra Slattery. And Michael and Scout, if your clients are only going to take a few minutes, a few seconds, you can fill in for them if you'd like. Remember to say something about it.
Welcome to Southern Oregon. My name is Susan Harris, and I am with the Family Nurturing Center. I am here today representing the facility that opened 11 months ago, thanks in part to the startup costs that the last biennium provided. The Family Nurturing Center has a bigger name. It's called Jackson County Children's Crisis Relief Nursery. You know us because there are 9 relief nurseries now in the state of Oregon, up and down the corridor and over in Bend. We're just attempting through our good works each and every day to reach into the lives of young children, newborn to 5 years old, and to truly make a difference in the way that they perceive themselves, the way that they learn, the way that they socialize and interact and mainstream. And by doing so, by the time these young ones hit kindergarten, they sense that they are part of a group rather than feeling, as many of them do now, abused and neglected, that there's something wrong with them. We would like to ask that in the funding of the Family Nurturing Center, Jackson County Children's Crisis Relief Nursery, that an effort be made to fund us at a level that will allow us to grow. In our startup costs that we received from you, again, last biennium, it allowed us to open our doors. We're now up to serving 56 children, and the demand is easily at 300 for this rural county. We want to make a difference in who the future children are in Jackson County. We would ask that you would consider, under your prevention and stable families portion of your bill, that we can truly make a difference with your help. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Dan Harris. I am here speaking in support of funding of the statewide system of relief nurseries. I serve on the board for the local relief nursery, which just opened a little short of a year ago here in Medford, thanks to assistance from the legislature last session. I can tell you that the money that was allocated to Medford to start up this relief nursery is money very well spent. I also serve as a juvenile and family court judge in this county, where over the last 10 years I have witnessed firsthand the effects, the devastating effects of methamphetamine and alcohol abuse on the families in our community. And those impacts fall mostly on the most vulnerable in our society, the young children who are least able to defend themselves. A few sobering statistics I think are important to mention. Last year, there were more than 10,000 confirmed cases of child abuse in the state of Oregon. One half of those cases involved children under the age of 5. One third of all children in foster care are under the age of 5. Studies show that early intervention in the lives of children at risk can make a tremendous difference in how they turn out and the opportunity they have to live a normal life. A Washington State study recently showed that nearly 80% of all incarcerated juvenile and adult offenders were abused or neglected as children. 80% of all incarcerated juvenile and adult offenders were abused or neglected as children. About 20% of all abused children are eventually convicted of a felony or serious misdemeanor. Now, these statistics speak to how important it is to intervene early in the lives of children at risk. That is the mission of the relief nursery. And in the court system, we need that support. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is Diane Rickard, and she would like to, she lives in a supported living home in Ashland, Oregon, and she'd like to talk for a few moments about some of the things she needs help with.
I need help with my bed. I need help tie my shoes. I need help brush my teeth. I need
walking.
I need help walking. I need help wash my face. Okay.
Thank you, Dee Dee.
You're welcome. And this is James Ward. He's a roommate of Dee Dee's, and he's here to speak for the need of increasing funding for developmental disability services and to how important staff is to him.
We need to mine the Olympic gold medal here. Before we don't win, we'll lose everything we empower to our people. We need the money right now before I get mad. Amen.
Thank you, James.
I have a brief thing I can read if we have time to fill in.
Sure.
Okay. My name is Michael Donahue, and I've managed a home for disabled adults for almost 10 years. I would like to speak for the individuals who staff the home that I manage. They are caring individuals who, through the course of their work shift, do a variety of tasks that range from the complicated to the ordinary and tedious. The hours are long, and the pay is low, especially in relation to the duties they are expected to perform in the course of a day, which includes, but is not limited to, passing and recording meds and topicals, performing complicated medical procedures, taking and recording blood sugars and blood pressure readings, administering enemas and suppositories, implementing complicated dietary plans, working as a member of the support team, following life-enhancing goals for individuals who are unable to do it for themselves due to their disability, trying to problem-solve and communicate and provide care for individuals who have little or no communication skills, being able to cook and put a savory meal on the table 3 times a day, making connections with family members and other friends in the community, which is beyond the scope of many of the people in the DD community, providing a safe environment, an environment that will provide a platform where individuals with disabilities can perform at their highest level and achieve a level of independence that may not be available to them in any other environment. These workers put a face to our caring society and represent all the hopes and endeavors our caring society has to help individuals with disabilities to thrive in our community. Please consider this when planning the allocation of resources, because the workers in this important field are among the lowest paid, not only in the healthcare field, but in society at large. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Could we invite Carol, Dan, Bill, and Sandra to the table? And on deck, Bill Thorndike, John Day, Mickey Kitchen, and Laura Hisamoto. And dive right in.
I'm Carol O'Neill. I'm a resident of Central Point here in Jackson County and currently in my second year as president of the Jackson County Master Gardeners Association. That's a voluntary position, by the way, as are all Master Gardener opportunities. Few things have influenced my life as much as the Extension Service. I joined 4-H as a 10-year-old, became a junior leader, and learned other skills that led me down my career path. But now as an adult, I speak for the Master Gardener program and the impact it has on our community. Master gardeners don't just learn how to grow plants, kill weeds, and learn to tell the good bugs from the bad. As president, I have the opportunity to observe the great growth in leadership and skill in educating the public that I see in Master Gardeners. The Master Gardener program has great benefits for all of us, whether or not we're Master Gardeners ourselves. Not only can you learn to be more self-sufficient by growing your own food, but it's a way to connect with nature in the face of growing suburbanization. It strengthens the community by encouraging intellectual growth and leadership. Our demonstration gardens, classes, school horticulture grants programs, the annual garden symposium are just a few examples of how we benefit the community, not just in horticultural information, but in helping Master Gardeners grow as leaders. Let me tell you just one story. I could tell you a lot, but I'll just tell you one story of a Master Gardener who developed an interest in insects. When she became a Master Gardener, she was neither a teacher nor an entomologist, but through opportunities in the Master Gardener program, became such a good and knowledgeable teacher that she now travels to 5 counties to teach classes about insect pest management and is widely recognized as an expert in her field.
Thank you. If there's more testimony that you'd like to submit in writing, we'd be happy to distribute it to the members of the committee.
May I add that we would like to have the Ways and Means Committee fully fund the OSU statewide policy options package at $15 million. Thank you.
No.
All right. In that case, this is my grandson, Dan.
And you've just used his 15 seconds. No, you haven't. Dan, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Dan Killam. I'm in the Master Gardener program also, and I've been in the 4-H program for up to 2 years. I'm speaking in support of Senate Bill 5515 for full funding of the $15 million option package for the 3 OSU statewide, including the OSU Extension Service. As a homeschooler, I've benefited so many ways from 4-H. I'm able to spend my time learning with other young people as well as adults. I've been able to meet many people who have experience in areas I know nothing about. And through 4-H, they're willing to share their knowledge. Archery raising pigs and participating in food cooking contests are all areas I've learned a great deal about in the past couple years and looking forward to learning more. No other program helps me learn such a wide range of skills from food handling to caring for the young pig I bought at an auction. I know becoming proficient and confident in areas such as public speaking, giving demonstrations, speeches, record keeping, organization, and as well as thinking on my feet are skills I will use to do well in 4-H and skills that I will be able to use for the rest of my life. I'm asking once again for the Ways and Means Committee to fully fund Senate Bill 5515, the OSU statewide policy options package at $15 million. Thank you.
Thank you. Well done, sir.
Good evening. I'm Bill Collins, and as you might guess, I'm here to support full funding for the policy options package for the 3 OSU statewides, including Extension Service. I'm a member of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association and a retired board member, and I was president of that body twice. I have owned 190 acres of forest land for almost 40 years. When we bought the property, I did not know much about forest management. I went to the extension forester, then it was Alan Campbell, for some information. Since then, I have taken courses offered by extension, including the Master Woodland Manager Program and many other courses, programs, and many colleges. Our property has been the site for many educational tours and programs. I not only feel confident enough to manage my own property now, that I can give something back to my community. I have been a member of the Jackson County Natural Resource Advisory Committee for 12 years. and the chairman of the Forestry Subcommittee for three. I'm also a board member of the Seven Basins Watershed Council. We are currently doing fuel reduction project on Sardine Creek and Gold Hill to make neighbors' homes safer. We have signed up 11 families with a total of 30 acres. We also completed a like project on Sykes Creek last year. This all started 38 years ago with a call to the Extension Office. This community needs Extension and all its programs now more than ever. I am asking the committee to fully fund the OSU statewide policy option plan for $15 million. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Dan.
Hello. My name is Sandra Slattery. I'm the executive director of the Ashland Chamber of Commerce, and I would like to thank you for establishing the Rainy Day Fund. Even though our projects and our programs may differ, the missions of chambers of commerce throughout the state of Oregon are similar: to improve the overall economic health of our communities. As the home to the Southern Oregon University, our largest employer, we are well aware of the importance of higher education to our economy. The funding of higher education is the top legislative priority for the Ashland Chamber of Commerce this year. A well-educated workforce, and by that I mean beyond K-12 education to include K-20, is critical to our efforts at improving the Oregon economy. Outside of the major urban areas of Portland and the Willamette Valley, which is traditionally called the rural areas of Oregon, we are dependent on the success of the regional universities to provide the education and research necessary for business expansion and growth. What are we saying to high school graduates in the rural areas of Oregon when we are defunding higher education? To us, you are saying to these students and families to send your kids away to college if you can afford it. To those who cannot afford it, well, then the message is clear. You are shut out of having an education to provide you the jobs that can give you a good standard of living. Let's talk about jobs. How do we address the problems in workforce education? We need our regional institutions and our community colleges to train our workforce, to provide the skills that are needed by business. If businesses cannot hire employees with skills, they will either recruit from out of state or, even worse, move their businesses out of Oregon. When we showcase Oregon to interested businesses, what is the saying about our qualified workforce? I know you support global business and a global economy, but we cannot do that if we don't fund higher education. I know you have very difficult decisions to make, but we must have you urge you to rethink your priorities. Do not fund one program and decimate the others.
Thank
you, Ms.
Slattery.
If this budget proposal is really about raising revenue, then let's have a real conversation about that to fund a truly sustainable economy, and I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next panel, please come up. And on deck, I'd like to invite Andreas Goldner, Randy Samuelson, Edward Smith, and Leslie Schrag. Start right in. Bill, do you want to start?
Thank you, Chair Nolan and Chair Schrader, for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name's Bill Thorndike, president of Metric Fabrication, and suffering some of the Southern Oregon famous hay fever right now, but I think I can get through this. I'd like to speak on behalf of both the importance of Southern Oregon University and Oregon Institute of Technology as two tremendously important anchors in Southern Oregon for us. I guess the question that I would ask you to ask yourselves is, can we afford to reduce, restrict, or restrain the capacity of these two institutions at such a critical time? I had the opportunity on Wednesday and Thursday to be in San Francisco for the district meeting of the Federal Reserve. Over the first 3 months of 2007, over 180,000 new jobs were created each month. But those jobs require skills. Walking into the lobby of the Federal Reserve Bank, you will find posters that are basically talking about $5,000 bonuses to fill difficult positions. John Nordstrom, who is a member of the board, said what is restricting Nordstrom's growth is access to qualified staff. So until we get quality staff, we will not get Nordstrom in Medford, I guess. The opportunities for qualified and skilled workers are phenomenal. I think we have an opportunity to take advantage of this today. If we don't, our neighbors to the north and south certainly will. I think our regional institutions are posed to better serve all of Oregon. We heard earlier about the joint venture with the community college, a unique opportunity to bring together community college, coursework, and higher education here in Jackson County. I'm also familiar about the wonderful addition in Klamath Falls for the Center of Health Professionals. As a business and a family, we've made a commitment to both of these capital projects because they are so critical to our communities. Why are they so critical to my community? It's because, first of all, I need to rely on those institutions to provide the type of employees I need for a manufacturing firm in Southern Oregon. It's also sometimes forgotten how hard it is to keep good people working for me when their spouse is interested in getting that teaching degree or nursing degree and having to not have to move to make that possible is so important.
Can you wrap it up? Thank you, Bill. And you've got lots of silent applause behind you. Oh, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Laura Hisamoto. I work in many different fields throughout this valley. I do a whole lot of different types of work. My profession, however, is I do inclusionary mainstreaming with high-functioning autism and Asperger's. I am asking this panel to take a look at the training that these people need, especially in the fields where we can help them become future citizens of our county and being future taxpayers. The kind of training that we could do with these people and help indulge and help fund our county positions and some of the menial positions where they would no longer have to pay out for services. They could have some of these people working with them. The other thing that the autistic parents are having a huge gala across town, and so they were unable to attend tonight. So they asked me to ask if you would please pass HB 219. It is regarding the insurance coverability of autism. Most insurance companies tend to think that by the time you're 7 years old, this pervasive identifiable disorder would be then magically healed. Most of us who work with autism realize that there are many types of this, just as there are many types of cancer. We're asking that they will take a look and have the insurance companies please take another look at this with the types of training that is out there and available to train not only educators, parents, and these students. We could have working tax-paying citizens in our fields, and we could help lessen the load on both our counties, our education systems. It's a win-win situation, and they have brought me lots of testimony I will leave on the table for you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Could you scoot the microphone up pretty close so that we get it on both, be able to hear it and get it on the recording?
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. I'm John Day. I'm the co-chair of the Capital Campaign for the Oregon Institute of Technology Center for Health Professions in Klamath Falls. I'm here to urge you to fund the $9 million construction bond for the completion of the second wing of our project at OIT. This is critically important to this market-driven project for all the hospitals and citizens throughout the state who currently use and will need health care in the future. I know that you recognize that there's a tremendous shortage of health care workers, and we are facing this in the state, and it is an important role of OIT to address the pending crisis for both rural and urban areas of the state in resupplying these people. But let me reinforce why it is imperative that this bond be issued and the Center for Health Professions be completed. While we appreciate that your budget includes a policy option package to support higher education programs throughout the state, most of OIT's portion, about $1.2 million, requires the project's additional capacity. Without the G-bond and the construction of the second wing, there's no room to offer these programs. We have the $12 million match, or we have $12 million in privately raised money in place to provide the match to the G-bond. If we cannot get the G-bond, additional fundraising opportunities will be lost, which include a $1.2 million commitment by OHSU to expand the nursing program at the center from 24 to 44 graduates per year. The project will add 750 CHP students to the OIT campus by the year 2010. Please help secure OIT's future in the health care of Oregon residents.
Can you wrap
help
it up, please?
Retain highly qualified students in our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Lots of hands waving.
Co-chairs Schrader and Nolan and members of the committee, I'm Mickey Ketchum from the Jackson County Commission on Children and Families. I'll call it CCNF just to make it short. I'm here to support Senate Bill 5504 to increase the basic capacity funding for CCNFs by $3 million. This would mean an additional $100,000 or so in our county. I've been a volunteer on the CCNF for a dozen or more years, and before that worked for the county as a teacher and a social worker for another dozen. I volunteer because I learned that the needs of the at-risk kids are often not their fault. Like the senior nearing graduation whose mom told her she was on her own because the mom was taking off with a boyfriend who was on a cross-country truck driving thing. Or the boy that was I started to chastise. We were on a field trip going to the top of our Table Rocks, and he was in thongs. And then I found out those were the only shoes he had. He also told me how he snuck into the gospel mission at the end of the month because his mom had drunk all the money for food. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been involved with the League of Women Voters' recent study of homeless. The basic capacity funds that we're asking for locally help fund a staff person who chairs the local homeless and runaway task force, and also funds DS&T meetings where they use some level 7 funds that would have helped the boy perhaps to get some shoes. I understand your dilemmas in funding many necessary programs with a finite amount of money, since we at the local CCNF have had the same dilemma, as our funds have been cut 51% in the last 5 years. We ask for the $3 million increase in basic capacity funding for CCNF statewide.
Thank you very much. Next panel, please. And on deck, I'll invite Robert Hansen, Josh Littlefield, Jane Stevenson, and Tom Keel. Musical chairs. Let's get going, sir.
Yes, hello, Senator Schrader, Representative Nolan, and committee members. My name is Edward Smith. I am here representing Oregon Recovery Homes, part of the policy option package 101-7 of the governor's recommended budget. I am here as one of two paid staff of the Oregon Recovery Homes. In the last, we represent 149 houses in the state of Oregon for recovering alcoholics and addicts and their children. The number of residents in our houses can easily fill this auditorium and then some. And if you think of the amount of people that go through in a year and are able to better their lives and move on to lives with their families, it doubles that. I just want to say that part of the policy option package for Oregon Recovery Homes is to fund additional two or three more outreach workers. Me and my fellow coworker in the last 2 weeks have worked over 160 hours, traveled almost 3,000 miles, and this is on an average 2 weeks for us. We're just here to beg and plead to please consider putting back in the funding for Oregon Recovery Homes Policy Option Package 101-7. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Yes.
My name is Leslie, and I'm also I'm Chapter 2's Chapter Chair of Oxford Houses. I'm Chapter 2's Chapter Chair of Oxford House of Medford, and our houses were opened by the Oregon Recovery Homes. Representative people here. and I'm also talking on the option package 101-7. The program, the Oxford houses that were brought together by Oregon Recovery Home saved my life. Mm-hmm. I have my children, and I have a life. I have things that wouldn't have been available to me without these people opening these homes. I volunteer and put my time and my effort back into building and helping more houses get started, more lives to be saved. And they make $1.40 per day per bed in the you know, that's not much considering that that could be life or death for a person without a place to go. We have 10 houses here in Medford alone that is just extremely upped the percentage rate, I believe, for the people staying clean in Medford at this time. I know that a year ago today is the day that I went into treatment. I was only allowed in that because TANF and OHP helped me to get there. And I stayed clean. I have 364 days clean today. And tomorrow will be my year. And
congratulations.
My ability to stay clean came from the support that I found in these houses because of these people who helped it make it possible for my life to continue on and to better itself. I really support this, and I really hope that you guys are able to produce some funding for them, because without them, I don't know where I would be. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Andreas Goldner. I'm the board chairman of the AHEC, Area Health Education Center for Southwest Oregon. I want to thank the co-chairs for their support of the OHSU budget. I recognize this has been a very difficult time. I would like to say, however, that there are a number of workforce initiatives that were in the governor's recommended budget, which we would like to have you support. The first of these is AHEC, Area Health Education Center, $1.5 million, which provides the infrastructure to support all of our workforce initiatives across the state and supports development of the pipeline of students going into the health and science professions. Two, regional medical education partnerships with University of Oregon, OSU, and the health systems in their communities would put first-year medical students in Eugene and Corvallis, $7 million. Very cost-effective way to increase capacity compared to the hundreds of millions being invested by other states in new medical schools. And three, community placement of dental students, also placing students off the hill and into the community for some of their clinical training. Again, extremely cost-effective way to leverage our schools with $300,000. We have a critical shortage of healthcare professionals in the rural areas of the state, and one of the ways to get them there is to have them have experiences there. We desperately need these funds. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir.
Hello. Thank you for coming here. My name is Randy Samuelson. I'm the executive director for HASL, and that's the Center for Independent Living. The first question everybody asks me is, what does HASL stand for? Handicapped Awareness and Support League. There are 9 centers for independent living in Oregon, and I'm going to give you all some really good information here about the most bang for your buck. My staff says I'm cheap. I'm just frugal. I have 2 copies, and I've included a bunch of business cards, so please feel free to contact me if you'd like your own copy. This talks about the 9 centers. We served over 21,000 folks last year, seniors and people with disabilities. We saved taxpayers $1.9 million. That's a 3% sampling of our efforts. So 20%, over 20% of the people in Oregon experience some sort of disability. 80% of the population will either experience a disability or have a family member experience that. So independent living is all about independence, staying in their home, not going to assisted living facilities, which are huge savings for the taxpayers. And we also, with the grain of America, myself included, disabilities are a natural part of life. So the population is growing. Our service numbers have increased 41% in the last year. We provide services to seniors and the disabled in Josephine and Jackson counties. And again, I urge you to, we're just asking that you restore our budget from the 2001-2003 budget, and that's only an $800,000 reinvestment into Oregon. And again, just a 3% sampling has saved the state of Oregon almost $2 million. Thank you very much for your time. I don't envy your position, but I admire you all. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Please come up, and on deck, let's have John Anderson, David Briggs, Annie Wadley, and Lori Collins. Hello?
Hello.
Come on. Start in.
Well, a little stage right here, but I'll go. My name is Robert Hansen.
Pull that mic pretty close, please.
Hello. My name is Robert Hansen. I'm also representing Oxford House of Southern Oregon, Oregon. And I'll get to the point after I finish what I'm going to say about why I'm here. Myself, I've been in Oxford over a year and a half, and it's kept me clean, sober, go to meetings, and all I want to do is here is I just want the Prop 101.7 is to keep the fundings for these research houses, you know, these housing for the addicts that need clean living. And it's working for me, and I know it can work for anybody else. You know, we just need the funding to keep these rolling and the treatment centers. And also, I'm a graduate of the ARC, and it just, if we have no funds, it's nothing's going to happen. So that's why I'm here. So thank you.
Thank you, and good luck.
How you doing? I'm Josh Littlefield. I'm an addict. I'm here as a resident from the Oxford House in Grants Pass under Recovery Homes Outreach, and I'm going for the portion of policy, option package 101-7. Basically, I'm just here to say that, you know, we really need this funding. There's only one house in Grants Pass, and I think it's real detrimental to recovery. I mean, not prison. I've been to prison. I know you guys offer treatment programs in prison. I was on the waiting list, and I never was able to go in there, and I was there for a 36-month sentence. And if it wasn't for this house, you know, I wouldn't be here today trying to talk to you guys begging for the money. I would probably be out there what you guys call a parasite in the ministry of communities. And basically, I'm just hoping you guys take into consideration what we're all saying here. We're really trying, and there's other people out there that need the help. And if it wasn't for these homes, then, you know, we wouldn't have a really good place to be. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Well said, and thank you.
Chairperson, members of the committee, my name is Jane Stevenson, and I'm the Jackson County Tobacco Prevention and Education Coordinator. I'm also an American Cancer Society volunteer. I just want to thank you for this opportunity tonight to express my support for investing in the tobacco prevention and education program. The tobacco prevention is the single most preventable cause of death and disease in Oregon. Each day, and I'd like to emphasize, each day in Oregon, the tobacco industry spends $445,000 to market their product. Each day in Oregon, 20 of our kids become addicted to tobacco. And one-third of these children will go on to die of a smoking-related illness. I just would like you to know that just this week in Lapine, Oregon, a colleague of mine discovered informational flyers that have been developed by Philip Morse. They say, speak out and say no to cigarette tax increase. They also go on to tell citizens, provide them with speaking points, and they also provide all of the representatives' names and contact information. The tobacco industry's own documents reveal that these informational campaigns are designed to convince you all to not enact policies and programs that actually reduce tobacco consumption. Increase in the price of tobacco is a proven, effective public health policy that keeps kids from starting to help from kids from starting and helping those who use tobacco quit. In Oregon, we are only spending a fraction of the amount of money that is recommended by the CDC in regards to tobacco prevention. Fortunately, in Jackson County, we are one of 14 of the 36 counties that do receive a small portion of funding. However, what's troublesome that we've seen recently is that we've seen an increase in tobacco consumption among youth.
Could you wrap it up, please?
Sure. So the money that tobacco prevention yields a 30-to-1 return in tobacco health care costs, and it saves lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name's Tom Keel. In 1975, I was elected to the Umpqua Community College Board. I was 39 at that time. I'm still serving. I still love community colleges. I'm 71. I still don't feel like I can't learn anything. I realize that this is the first step in the funding process. The comment was made in one of the newspaper articles that you wanted to begin a conversation. One thing was, I was hoping we'd start with the governor's proposal and work the other direction. I support the increase for K-12, but under the underfunding again of the community college will affect many in reaching past K-12 to reach their goals, two-year associate degree transfer programs, workforce development, and other programs that we are part of the community college responsibility. We're not sitting defeated like one of the other speakers. We have started partnerships, and that's one thing wonderful about the word community. They're getting involved, but they can only do so much. We have a new truck driving program. Douglas County funded two trucks for us, $54,000. Local industries painting the trailers, keeping the motors going, tires and things like that. The Cow Creek Tribe gave us a building to use, and Douglas County Bank, or a bank in Douglas County, also tripled the cost of the donations in low-cost loans to the students. Another one is construction technology. Umpqua Builders Association and other people donated to that. And another program is the nursing program, which we've increased 40%.
Thank you, Mr. Teal. Can you wrap it up, please?
Anyway, that is some of the things that we're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. Please come on up. On deck, Debbie Crenshaw. Excuse me, Gayla Coney, Lee Lamphere, and Donna Jean Wendell. Please begin.
Hi, my name is Ann Wadley. I'm an accountant for Southern Oregon University for the Housing Department, Family Housing Department, and the Food Services, and I'm also a local member of the SEIU Local 503. Up until January, I loved my job. I loved coming to work every day. Not once did I ever wake up and say, gee, I just don't feel like coming to work today and call in sick. But on January 8th, my life turned upside down. On January 8th, 25 dismissal notices were handed out to my fellow employees. Four coworkers in my office alone were given notice of dismissal. These dismissals are due to a $4 million deficit that SOU is now facing. Kids are starving for knowledge. They want to go to college. They know the value of an education, and they'll do anything right now to get it, including incurring outrageous amounts of debt. Some of my coworkers have dedicated 33 years, 22 years, 8 years, 5 years to helping students, only to get a one-page letter saying, we've deemed your job no longer necessary due to budget cuts. And for me, the hardest time is still ahead. People that I cherished working with on that campus who received layoff notices effective June 30th are still coming to work. They still show up dedicated to the students. They still smile, and God only knows why. But I know why, because they love their job. It's not the big paycheck that keeps us all working at SOU, I can guarantee you that. It is the satisfaction of knowing that we mentored and laughed with and consoled or just listened to one student. It only takes one student, and in turn possibly changes their entire life course. All this pain and suffering doesn't have to happen. All that needs to be done is for our state government to follow up on its promises. The state must ensure that Oregonians have access to an affordable, quality education. It is time for Oregon to invest in quality higher education for our state, for our economy, and for our future. What now seems good on paper and is reflected in the bottom line may truly not be so good come next year when students start to arrive back on campus at SOU. I just know that on July 2nd, when the remaining budget cut survivors come to work, unlock those doors, step into those quiet, empty offices, there's going to be no winner.
Thank you.
co-chairs and members of the committee, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this evening. My name is David Briggs. I'm on the board of directors for Umpqua Community College, and I'm here to support more funding for community colleges. We have done a lot in the last several bienniums with fewer dollars. We're going to continue to do more with what we have, but I appreciate the desire to make changes in the Oregon Opportunity Grants to increase the help the students to gain access to our colleges. Community colleges are a very affordable way to gain a college degree and to provide the means to go on to a four-year program. However, without enough funding, community colleges won't be able to offer the quality of education our students and our citizens deserve. It's not enough to get them in the door, into the classrooms. We must provide quality learning opportunities that will enable them to become leaders in our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Lots of support. Sir.
My name's John Anderson. I'm on the faculty of the Mechanical and Manufacturing Engineering Department at Oregon Institute of Technology. And I'm here representing the Manufacturing 21 Coalition. The coalition supports Oregon Inc.'s manufacturing workforce recommendations contained in the Cluster Development Fund. Oregon Inc. recommended a $2 million industry-designed package to tackle our number one workforce priority, and that is filling the training pipeline to highly skilled, living wage jobs in Oregon. OIT is the university affiliate for a program called Project Lead the Way. This is a nationwide pre-engineering program with a heavy emphasis on real-world skills that are needed in manufacturing organizations. Funding Oregon Inc.'s workforce recommendations will allow OIT to expand our efforts to train and equip high schools to deliver this program. The state will have more capable instructors and counselors training more youth for skilled jobs in manufacturing if you choose to make this investment. Thank you.
Honored co-chairs, Schrader and Nolan, and members of the committee. My name is Lori Collins, and I'm an SSA, that's a social service assistant, for the Department of Human Services, and I live in Central Point. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. I'm here to testify today to tell you that the co-chair's recommended budget is not sufficient for Oregon's most vulnerable citizens. Your current budget does not allow for funds that will keep positions like mine available to provide much-needed services for the children of our state. By cutting the budget, you are eliminating the people who assist the caseworkers by being an extra pair of eyes and ears while we are providing transportation, supervising visits, attending family decision meetings, court hearings, etc. SSAs are there with the clients and the families of the children that are in the care and custody of the state of Oregon. With your budget, approximately 200 SSA positions will be cut to allow for 55 more casework staff. The idea is to relieve some of the case numbers that workers are carrying. This sounds great. Realistically, it won't relieve enough work for the caseworker to be able to provide all the services that SSAs currently do. How can you fix this? Let me tell you what many Oregonians feel need to happen. First, you need to raise the $10 Oregon corporate minimum tax. Did you know that this tax has not been raised since 1931? If this tax would have increased at the same rate as the college tuitions, it would be $1,500 a year today. Next, you need to close the loopholes in the corporate tax laws. This will help protect our state's most vulnerable citizens. You may ask who those citizens are. They are the seniors and the children, the past and the future of our state. So let's do what's right for them.
Thank you.
And I also have information to leave you.
Please, we'll be happy to pass it around and recognize all the applause in the audience. Let's invite the next panel. And before I do that, I've been advised that there is a Gray Mercury Grand Marquis in the parking lot with lights on.
License plate XHS152. On deck, I'd like to invite Dean Wendell, Carolina Rigaldo, Alan Berlin, and Bernadette Maziarski. Please begin.
Thank you. I'm Donna Jean Wendell. I am here to advocate for adequate funding for the Oregon Judicial Department. I'm here as in a unique position as I am a volunteer for the Citizen Review Board in Josephine County. I have served as the chairman of the statewide advisory committee, and would like to let you know that we have a number of volunteers throughout the state that give their time, have received an amazing amount of training in order to be able to review the children that are in out-of-home placement in all of our counties. In order for us to function, we need the support of staff through the Judicial Department. That is just one of the areas in which volunteers have played a major part for, in the case of the Citizen Review Board, it has been for over 20 years. I have served in that capacity in Josephine County, one of the first counties to have a Citizen Review Board, for that entire period of time. So you can tell that I am quite dedicated to the program, to the children and the families, and the need for these families to have the children have permanence in their lives. And that is our major goal, is to be able to assist the Judicial Department, especially the judges, in reviewing the cases. They are already overstressed, and we do provide a great service. And would just like to encourage you to continue the adequate funding for the department. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Honorable Co-Chair Senator Schrader, Republican Nolan, and members of the Budget Committee. My name is Debbie, and I live in Ashland. I work for Addis Home Care of Medford as a housekeeper and personal aide. For 15 years, I have assisted seniors, disabled Oregonians, and their own home. I give cooking, cleaning, and grooming assistance. I also help people bathe, get out of bed, and remind them to take their medications. My co-workers and I help ensure that these people are safe and comfortable in the familiar surroundings of their own home. Most of the people I care for do not have much money, and after they pay for their bills and their care, they really have nothing left. The work I do means these vulnerable citizens can stay in their home and can live longer, healthier, and happier lives. Home care is an affordable alternative to nursing home care. The co-chair's recommended budget is insufficient to meet the care providers and the clients we serve. I'm asking that you approve a budget that fully funds care provider services like home care, child care, nursing home care, and adult foster services. As a member of SEIU, I am joined by 18,000 care providers giving essential care to over 48,000 Oregonians. We speak as one and asking for your support. Quality service, workplace safety for care providers, and collective bargaining rights for care providers like adult foster care providers and child care providers. By increasing Oregon's minimum tax, you will be able to afford to care for Oregon's most vulnerable citizens. Without increasing this tax, you can say to that fat tax corporation, need more help than seniors, disabled, and children. Please, fully fund care provider services. Raise Oregon corporate tax minimum above $10 and care for our vulnerable. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Gaia Perrin Chief Carney, and I am on staff for SEIU. I submitted copies of testimony for a nursing home worker who could not be here tonight, so you all have copies. In a nutshell, she's a 17-year-old CNA working in a nursing home in Grants Pass, and she asks you to increase the recommended staffing ratios in Oregon's nursing homes. Right now, the co-chair's budget does not allow enough money to raise the staffing ratios to a level that Oregon's residents in nursing homes can enjoy. And the recommended staffing ratios, CNA to residents, is 7, 11, 18. And right now, those ratios are 10, 15, 25. And I also want to mirror the testimony of the other care providers and other SEIU workers here tonight and ask that you raise the corporate tax minimum. In a nutshell, raise the corporate minimum tax $10. That's whack.
Thank you.
Sir?
Co-Chair Nolan, Co-Chair Schrader, and the committee. I am Lee Lanfier. I am the president of the Workforce Development Council, Rogue Valley Workforce Development Council in this region. And I came remarkably to speak on behalf of everyone's interest in this room. I find that I agree with everyone here. The challenge that I think that you face and that we all face is that we all know that the only people who can afford to pay the bill for all of this are the people who are employed. I am here to ask you to make the decision to support workforce because it's the right decision for every interest in this room. In our region alone, if we fail to take care of the businesses that Peter Angstad spoke about, we could see a swing of $280 million worth of economic development on the positive side versus $280 million worth of negative impact if we don't take care of just the traded sector businesses that we know about in our region who are needing skilled workers. We also know that the only place we can get those workers is by skilling up the people who live here and work here. So we ask you to support the skill up funding, to support clusters, because that aggregates business needs, and to support the increase in the community college funding.
Thank you. Next panel, please. And on deck.
And I have some literature here.
Yes. Thank you. On deck, Doris Johnson, Paul Usri, Tammy Anaya, and Kathleen McNeil.
Yes. I'll just remind them.
Somebody start.
All right. Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader. My name is Dean Wendell from Grants Pass. I'm a current longtime board member of Rogue Community College, also a past chairman. I'm a member of the Oregon Community College Association and the past president of that group. And I'm also a commissioner on the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. I've been there for 5 years. I'm not speaking about community college funding tonight. I do support the comments from Dr. Peter Angstad, president of Rogue Community College, and my colleagues from Umpqua Community College who spoke here earlier. First, I applaud you for your leadership in making the shared responsibility model a reality. Under the funding pressures you have, making this program come true is difficult, but families, students now, and students of the future probably have no idea what you've done for them, but they will find in a few years that it's great strides that you're making for these people to have a quality education without acquiring a lot of debt, as you spoke earlier. I am here to speak, though, about the SPIRE program. You had that was in the governor's budget for about $1.3 million, but did not make it into the co-chair's budget. HB 2729 makes SPIRE a state program, and 5044 funds the program. SPIRE is a special outreach program that organizes adult volunteers to come to secondary schools, support students in securing financial assistance for college and other forms of secondary education. It is the adult volunteers that is the heart of the program, paid coordinators needed for training, information about financial resources, and support in answering difficult questions. This prior program is funded in large part by grants in the past from the Oregon Community Foundation and the Ford Foundation. We serve about 80 schools now through this program. We want to expand to 190 schools. We still will seek the funding from those foundations, but we need the funding permanency in the state for this, and we look forward to having this be a reality. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Carolina Regalado.
And I'm Jackie Macias.
Could you bring that mic just a little bit closer so everyone can hear?
Both of us are part of the meth project. And our video was about a girl just desperate for drugs.
She's at school and the only way is faking a stomachache.
That's how far kids go for obsessions like this.
At the end, someone finds her, and well, as you can see, she's pretty much busted.
Well, we really enjoyed working with our 4-H leader, Alex.
She is a great teacher. What we really enjoyed about her is that she shows us how to work every little thing.
She showed us how to use cameras, tripods, lights, and all types of microphones to make our video perfect.
She gave us packets to learn more about cameras, and we learned how to use the Video Maker program.
We are glad we are part of this project. We had the opportunity to learn and to show everybody our video.
We request that you fund Senate Bill 5515 for Oregon State University statewide. Thank you, and remember, don't use drugs ever.
Thank you.
In theater, we're told never to follow a child act.
Yeah.
Good evening, and welcome to sunny Southern Oregon, and for our local delegation, welcome home. I'm Alan Berlin. I'm the executive director of the Southern Oregon Child and Family Council. We provide Head Start to over 900 children in Jackson and Josephine counties, and I'm here to request the restoration of the governor's full funding for the Oregon Head Start pre-kindergarten program. We currently serve only 60% of our community's eligible children and have consistently held a word-of-mouth waiting list of over 300 children. These children will be 4 years old only once and only for 1 year of their lives. Without full funding for Oregon Head Start, each and every year, 100 newly turned four-year-olds here in Jackson and Josephine County and over 1,000 in the state of Oregon will never get the Head Start that will make a great difference in their lives. I do want to thank you members of the Ways and Means Committee for recognizing what a difference Head Start makes in the life of an at-risk child and for recognizing Head Start as an investment in Oregon's future. The $29 million in revenue that you have dedicated to Head Start is a step in the right direction, but we can't afford to fall short of full funding. Your committee needs to find the final $10 million to fully fund Head Start over the next biennium. All potential sources of funding should be considered. Without full funding, close to 1,000 children living in poverty in Oregon will be denied access to Head Start. These children won't get a second chance to benefit and can't wait until the next legislative session. Without full funding, these children are likely to start kindergarten already behind. Without full funding, they are more likely to need costly remedial classes, to fail a grade, and become involved in crime. Without full funding, they are also less likely to graduate from high school and go on to being productive citizens.
Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity. And I do have material.
Excellent.
For you.
Thank you.
Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader and members of the committee, my name is Bernadette Mazarski. As project coordinator of Living Well program, which offers individuals an opportunity to take better control of their health. as a member of the Rogue Valley Council of Government Senior Advisory Council, and a caregiver who cared for her husband with chronic health conditions for over 2.5 years prior to his death. I feel I am uniquely qualified to say to you, the Oregon State Legislature cannot afford to ignore the fact that we are facing a silver tsunami. By 2030, the number of people 65 and older in our state will double. We know that 80% of people age 65 and older have at least one chronic condition. 50% have two or more chronic conditions. Thus, we can be certain that there will be a major increase in the number of individuals with chronic conditions. They say that a chronic condition is like wolves. It runs in packs. This will not only have an impact on our lives of individuals affected, it will also impact the cost of our health care system. An average annual health care cost for individuals with a chronic condition is $6,032. This is more than 5 times the average health care cost of an individual without a chronic condition. In addition, these chronic conditions will not manage place people in increased risk requiring care through our long-term care system. If we are to control health care costs, we must begin to address how we approach caring for people with chronic conditions. Over the past year, I have been involved in a successful program called Living Well. Through the Living Well program, we have provided individuals with tools to help control their chronic conditions in their lives. The state needs to invest in evidence-based programs that help people manage these conditions.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next panel, please. And on deck, Kim Blossom, Al Densmore, Tim Franklin, Angela Curtis.
Good evening, co-chairs and members of the Budget Committee. My name is Anaya, and I live in Medford. I've been a care provider for many years, working with children, young people, and adults. I currently care for my grandson, Lex, through the employment-related daycare program. My daughter, Candace, works and attends school part-time. If it were not for the ERDC program, she would be paying over $150 a week, and instead, she now pays $33. She gets paid $8 an hour at her job, so it means the difference between buying more food, gas, health insurance, co-pays, and prescriptions. Speaking of health insurance, I don't have any. I've battled cancer 2 times. I've had radioactive treatment on my thyroid, and last year I had 3 major surgeries. After a very short recovery time, I had to return to work because I had no safety net. I need the work, my grandson needs the care, and my daughter needs the assistance so she can go to work and to school. As a member of SEIU, I am joined by over 18,000 care providers giving essential care to over 48,000 Oregonians. We speak as one in asking you to support quality services, workplace safety for care providers, and collective bargaining rights for care providers like adult foster care providers and child care providers. The co-chair's recommended budget does not include enough money for child care workers' first contract, and without that contract, I have no hope of a raise in pay or a path to health insurance. Maybe large corporations can pay their fair share, and you wouldn't have to cut or underfund essential services. This seems like the right thing to do. Please do the right thing. Please fully fund child care workers' first contract. Remember my story when you vote on the budget. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Paula Usry. I am a communication studies instructor at Umpqua Community College. I love my job. because I love my students, and I believe that they are the leaders of our future, and they're the ones that are going to address the problems of that silver tsunami that's coming. But I'm also very concerned because so many of the students that we deal with at a community college are basically running a marathon without shoes. And if we continue to not provide the kinds of courses they need, if we cut classes because we don't have adequate funding, and if we don't provide them support, what we're asking them to do is to run that marathon barefoot over broken glass. These students, our future leaders, want to be a part of the economic solution, not a part of the problem. I'll tell you about one of my students, and this is not unusual. Unfortunately, this is too common. One of my students told me she dropped out of the seventh grade because one of her teachers told her she was nothing but trash. She believed it. She got pregnant at 14, has raised a child, and has returned to college. She's struggled to catch up academically, and she wants to enter the healthcare field if there is room in the program for her, because those positions are limited. Lack of funding, lack of program support. I've had students who have told me that they have come out of drug families, been homeless, everything else. They, if they were here, if they had the luxury of being here tonight and they weren't struggling with childcare and jobs and other issues, they would say, please hear our voice and adequately fund community college and our futures.
Thank you.
Yes. Good evening, committee. My name is Kathleen McNeil, and I am the director of the Success at Southern Student Support Services Program, a federally funded grant program serving low-income, first-generation, and students with disability to help them stay in school and graduate at Southern Oregon University. First of all, I'd like to thank you for your support of funding for the shared responsibility model, but that is not enough. A third of SOU's undergraduate students meet the federal criteria of low-income students. Almost half of them are first-generation undergraduates, and 7% of our students are students with documented disabilities. The Student Support Services Program at SOU is funded to serve less than 12% of the eligible students. This evening, you will hear the stories of some of those students, if they get a chance to get up here. You will hear about their families, their histories, their dreams, and the many ways in which they want to serve their communities and the state of Oregon. The Oregon Employment Department's projections on occupations from 2004 to 2014 states that during this period there will be 50,066 job openings in the management, business, and financial sector of Oregon's economy. 90% of these positions will require a bachelor's degree, and 97% of these positions preferred a bachelor's degree and in initial employment. 24% of all the positions in this report require a bachelor's degree. Where are we going to find these college graduates if we do not find the resources to support higher education in Oregon? We can no longer afford to have a small minority of our population as college graduates. Oregon needs the support of its low-income and first-generation college graduates, and these students need Oregon support. And they need it beyond just financial aid so that they can graduate and become successful, productive citizens in our economy. Please restore the governor's education budget, and especially the $7 million to regional institutions to support retention and graduation of our students. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Doris Johnson, the Executive Director of Institutional Advancement at Umpqua Community College in Roseburg. In this capacity, I am responsible for the college's community relations, its foundation, and its alumni association, among other duties. In other words, my job is to find individual, private, grant, and gift support for the college. We've done that, and we'll continue to do that. And we've been successful at that. And while not easy, that support comes most readily to our career and technical courses, the ones where the job at the end of the training is most evident. That's why I'm here to support an appropriation of $525 million for the Community College Support Fund. The amount in the governor's recommended budget, $483 million, will return community colleges to the year 2001. What the co-chairs of this committee have put before the public is explicable in light of the facts and in light of its impact on the lives of the Oregonians seeking to acquire a post-secondary education. Umpqua Community College is a comprehensive community college. It is the only institution of higher learning in Douglas County, an area the size of the state of Connecticut. We have an extensive catalog of courses, from auto mechanics to nursing to welding to a new program this fall to train paralegals to English, U.S. history, art, mathematics, and so on. While none of them is brain surgery 101, we do offer the prerequisites for that course. There's an element of false economy in voting to expand the number of students eligible for financial aid, while at the same time approving a spending figure that will force community colleges to reduce course offerings and raise tuition.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
On deck, I'd like to invite Robert Graham, Judith Benjamin, Aaron Benjamin, and Alma Rosa Alvarez. Who's starting? Somebody? Okay.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Co-chairs Nolan, Schrader, and members of the committee. My name is Angela Curtis, and I'm the director for the Jackson County Commission on Children and Families. And I'm here in regard to Senate Bill 5504 to encourage you to support a $3 million increase in the basic capacity funding for the statewide system of local commissions on children and families. The Commission on Children and Families does not provide any direct services to children and families. Instead, we actually work to enhance and maximize both the other state and local investments in programs that do provide services to children and families. There's a commercial on television about a product that says, we don't make the products that you buy, we make the products that you buy better. That's essentially what the commission strives to do. We try to support the programs who are directly serving children and families to maximize public and private investments in these programs. We do this by promoting the coordination and collaboration of services between programs to help avoid duplication of services and things like that. Two things that are real strengths of the commission system are, number one, it's a statewide system, but it's designed to empower local communities to have the local authority to identify the needs that are most important to the members in their own communities for those children and families, and to come up with local solutions to meet those needs. And as we all know, the needs throughout the state vary. The needs in Jackson County are different than the needs in Multnomah County. Although there are some common needs, there are unique situations for those local communities. And this is really an opportunity to empower local communities to come up with their own solutions and be part of that solution. Additionally, the commission system is really adept at leveraging public investments with local and private support. In 2004 and 2005, the commission system leveraged $30 million and over 500,000 volunteer hours. So there's a great opportunity through state investment to get the community to step up and be part of the solution for their own children and families. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Kim Blossom, and I am a student at Southern Oregon University. I'm also a graduate of Umpqua Community College. Thank you for listening to my thoughts today. I am profoundly grateful for the opportunity I have to go to school, partly for my own sake, because an education is a glorious thing. I love learning and growing and developing my own potential. But I also go for the sake of my community. I go to improve my ability to contribute effectively, to give back to a community that supported my effort to improve my own circumstance. Education is not an expenditure, it is an investment. There are many things we must spend money on that never seem to show a return, but education is the investment that allows a community to grow stronger, to be not only self-sustaining, but self-nurturing. Education can easily be the difference between a life of poverty and a life of independence and contribution. We know there is a widening chasm between the wealthy and the impoverished in this country. Education is the tool that can teach us how to populate that space with healthy, interdependent, empowered communities. I implore you to invest in the tools we need to build our strength. I ask you, please, to fully fund education. It is our brightest hope for a healthy and productive future.
Well done. Thank you. Hi, Al.
Representative Nolan, Senator Schrader, and members of the Ways and Means Committee, my name is Al Densmore. I'm a member of the Medford City Council, and on behalf of the mayor of the city, Gary Wheeler, who couldn't be here, we'd like to express our deep appreciation for you having a hearing here in Medford and allowing us as citizens to comment. Having been a member of the House a long time ago in a political galaxy far away, I realized the High Wire Act you must perform in balancing the finances and numerous priorities of Oregon state government, and I appreciate your work. And I just have a couple of issues that I'd like to raise with you. My toll-free number is 888-802-4182 if you'd like to visit with me by phone on anything. I'm always happy to talk. I just would like to, first issue may not be surprising to you given my vantage point as a city councilman, having been a unique person who cast a vote for Senate Bill 100 in 1973, was mayor of the city of Medford in 1977 when we had the first land use plan approved, and now as a member of the city council, I'd like to urge you to retain and increase, if possible, the Department of Land Conservation and Development Grants Program. It's very, very important. Since 2006, cities, the county, we've worked very hard with DLCD to do that, and we need your help. And the second issue may surprise you. I'd like to be here in support of the partnership of SOU and RCC. It seems to me that we here in Medford have to train people for careers, for the kind of earning capacity to allow them to stay here, raise families here, buy homes here, retain and attract businesses here. So thank you for your work.
Thank you. Yes.
Good evening. Thank you for providing this forum tonight. My name is Tim Franklin, and I'm a small farmer here in Jackson County. We raise vegetables and vegetable seed, cattle, and sheep. Recently, I've had the good fortune to work with the Oregon State University Small Farms Program representative for Jackson and Josephine County. Most of the farms in this part of Oregon are small, but their current impact on the economy is important, and it's growing. Understandably, many of us were very pleased when the OSU Small Farms Program began in this area about a year ago, though we thought it was long overdue. Just in the first year of its operation, the OSU Small Farms Program has helped me review our farm operations, rewrite our business plan. It's allowed us to become a more economically viable operation. Even more importantly, the Small Farms Program has facilitated a discussion that's leading to concrete ways in which local farms will meet the food needs of the local community, including low-income groups. Local growers, businesses, service organizations, churches, and community members have come together to recreate a local food economy. And that is what farming used to be all about, and it's what it's beginning to be about again with the help of programs like this one. In truth, I'd prefer not to be here asking for continued funding of what I consider to be an essential program. I'd rather be here with the hope that you provide additional funding for this service, or rather restoration of funding, for example, for the livestock extension agent that we lost a few years ago, or shortly after that, the agronomist that we lost. But I'll stick to the essentials. I'm here to ask you now to support the OSU statewide policy options package. It's covered under Senate Bill 5515 at $15 million. Thanks again for the opportunity to provide input.
Thank you very much. Please come up. I'll call your attention to the fact that it's almost 8:20, and we're going to run until 5 o'clock, or 9 o'clock. You may be here till 5 in the morning, but I won't. That means we will not be able to hear spoken testimony from all of you. I'll call one more panel in order, and then I'm going to exercise the chair's discretion to call a few people out of order because there are some issues that have not yet been raised at all. And I want the committee to have the benefit of hearing as many of the issues as we can. And by showing your support, I think you've communicated well to us the depth of concern about the issues that have already been spoken. So the next panel on deck will be Ruth Alexander, Amy Amrine, Chuck Keel, and Karen Collis. And now, please begin.
Good afternoon, or good evening. My name is Robert Graham. I live in Medford. I work in Josephine County. I'm here to address the woeful failure of Senator Schrader's budget to adequately fund the state's community colleges, as well as its failure to adequately fund the state's judiciary. I call it his budget because that's what it is. It reflects his reform ideas. It reflects his bias and prejudices as it relates to the judiciary and to the community colleges. I hope there are some members on this committee and in the legislature as a whole who are not sheep, who can exercise some independence, and who might have some common sense to understand how negatively Senator Schrader's budget impacts Oregon. The governor has proposed a minimum budget for the needs of the community colleges. It's at least a good start. His budget recognizes that the community colleges are a key component to economic growth in Oregon. On the other hand, Senator Schrader's budget fails to provide basic funding support for the community colleges. For Rogue Community College, that will amount to a $300,000 in additional budget on top of a $3 million over the past year. Senator Schrader's budget decimates the governor's capital construction fund. Senator Schrader's budget results in higher tuition costs, thereby making a community college education unattainable for those students who need the education and work training the most. As far as the judiciary budget is concerned, the state's judges are the lowest paid in the country. My God, the Jackson County head librarian was higher paid than the circuit court judges of our state. Finally, as you all know, Josephine County is in dire need of a fifth judge position. The judicial system in the county is about to collapse under the heavy weight of the meth caseloads. Finally, in conclusion, I ask, is it your duty as a legislator to serve Senator Schrader's draconian agenda, or is it to serve the best interests of the citizens of the state of Oregon? Thank you.
Next.
Hello, my name is Alma Rosa Alvarez, and I am a professor of English and writing at Southern Oregon University. In my time in Oregon, it has struck me that many of the best high school students in our region leave the state to pursue their higher education goals elsewhere. I have also noticed that many of our very good college students attend their local regional universities for 2 years and then transfer to schools out of state. Recently, I was in California. While there, I heard an ad in Spanish telling prospective college students that the state of California can fund their college education. The ad stated that the state of California supports higher education. Recently, I mentioned to my father the financial difficulties various regional Oregon universities have and the challenges Oregon students face in financing their higher educations. My father, who lives in California and no longer has college-aged children, stated that California is doing something right, that the state finances students' educations. Lack of investment in higher education, only budgeting $2 million in support of regional schools instead of $9 million, is sending students a message that their futures are not valuable. I would like to urge that the original amount of $35 million in support of higher education be reinstated. I would like to urge that the money budgeted in support of regional schools be $9 million. By sending the message that higher education is not important in the state of Oregon, prospective students will go to other states like California.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hello, co-chairs Schrader and Nolan, members of the committee. I'm Judith Benjamin on the board of the League of Women Voters of Ashland. Appreciate the opportunity to address this committee without having to travel to Salem. I'm here in support of SB 5504 and specifically the $1 million for CCF to help provide shelter and support services for homeless youth to enable their transition to independent living. Oregon's homeless youth, a report published last October by the League of Women Voters of Oregon, estimates that as many as 24,000 youth are homeless in this state. Here in Jackson County, in January 2006, a one-night survey showed 120 youth 17 years old or younger living alone on the streets with no parent or adult to supervise them. Last year, the Medford School District was listed second in the state for the number of homeless students in the schools. Medford Police Department cited 300 reports of runaways over the past year, while Ashland Police estimated about 30 to 40 homeless youth living in the Ashland area, jumping to 70 to 100 in the summer months. Yet Jackson County has no facility specifically designed to offer temporary and transitional housing for homeless youth. Through its leadership of the Homeless Youth Subcommittee of the Homeless Task Force, the county's commission has played an important role coordinating the nonprofit, agency, and school programs that focus on the needs of homeless youth. Private Citizen Medford is planning to develop a youth shelter and has been meeting with the Homeless Youth Subcommittee. While $1 million divided among the various counties will hardly be enough to build and sustain such a facility, they can jumpstart the process. They may also enable the commission to develop an accurate data collecting system to provide a strategic plan for coordinated services on behalf of homeless youth. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes.
My name is Aaron Benjamin. I'm not a member of the League of Women Voters. However, I could be. I'd like to thank Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan and the members of the Ways and Means Committee for recognizing that housing costs are out of reach. And it's important to assist hardworking low and middle income families that are on fixed incomes. Affordable housing is generally defined as costing households or families less than 30% of their income. Workforce housing is somewhat similar, except that it has the added distinction of being specifically targeted to employed households and is further intended to benefit a local workforce. In Ashland, an applicant earning up to 80% of median income qualifies for affordable housing. Due to downward trends in the supply of affordable workforce housing and higher real estate prices in Ashland, we're going to see more and more middle and low-income residents moving out of Ashland, not to mention those who will not come here in the first place. Who are they and why should we care? They are the police officers, firefighters, teachers, doctors, medical technicians, restaurant workers, musicians, artists, actors, and small business owners. They are the people that make our lives interesting, comfortable, and secure. Negative repercussions of the shortage of affordable housing are already plentiful. They include declining school enrollment, school closures and loss of teachers.
Thank you very much. Lots of support for you. On deck, I'd like to call Edwin Champman, Randy Schuen, Toby Freeman, Brian Allen, Blaine Allen. Yes, please.
Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader and members of the committee, my name is Ruth Alexander. I'm a member of the Ashland School Board. My daughter went through the Ashland schools from first grade to her graduation from Ashland High School in 2000. She received an incredibly fine education. So over the past 7 years, watching our district cut programs, let valued teachers go, and close two schools has been alarming. Since my election to the school board 2 years ago, I've come to understand the heartbreaking reality of having to choose between bad decisions and disastrous decisions, whether to cut vocational education classes or foreign language classes, whether to increase elementary class size or decrease the number of kindergarten hours we can provide. We are tearing apart the structure of our K-12 system bit by bit by bit. I know your choices are no better than ours, and I thank you sincerely for recognizing that it was time to increase the K-12 allocation. $6.245 billion will make our job a lot easier. However, it is unconscionable that funding for higher education is not adequate to provide for Oregon's young adults once they leave K-12. How do we expect them to survive in this world without advanced skills? Yet we must not weaken the bottom rungs of the education ladder in order to steady the upper rungs. We must find other sources of funding. When I learned that Oregon's corporate minimum tax is only $10 per year, I felt sure that zeros had been left off the figure. $10 is a ridiculously low amount. Please keep K-12 funding at $6.245 billion. And increase the allocation for higher education and health services through an increase in the corporate minimum tax. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you for your leadership on this issue.
Thank you.
Co-chairs Nolan, Schrader, and members of the committee. My name is Amy Amrine. I am a parent in Ashland and a member of the Ashland School Board. I'd first like to thank you for your decision to implement a rainy day fund for the state of Oregon. Your leadership on this issue helps move us in the right direction and begins to prepare us for future downturns in state revenue that we know will certainly and eventually come. But I'm here tonight mainly to urge your support for the co-chair's K-12 budget allocation of $6.245 billion. Although this is not my desired outcome for full funding of the quality education model, it does move us closer and is a vast improvement from the past several legislative sessions when we have had to beg for mere adequacy. This allocation will make a huge difference to the children in Ashland schools where I am a school board member. We have been dealing with a double whammy of inadequate state support coupled with the declining enrollment for several years, and this allocation will make budgeting this year a bit easier because we will need to deal only with the known impact of declining enrollment. Although I am gratified with the K-12 allocation, I am dismayed at the higher education budget of the co-chairs. I urge you to find a new revenue source that can be dedicated to support higher education. As a small business owner who has recently been searching for a qualified engineer to grow our business and has been dismayed at the quality of the number of applications, I am asking you to raise the corporate minimum and dedicate the revenue to the higher education budget. All of us can afford more than $10 per year. Do it. I give you permission. I implore you to take action. Please have the courage to do what is right. If you cannot bring yourself to increase the corporate minimum, then please find another new source of revenue to fund the full spectrum of public school education so our citizenry can continue to have access to quality schooling. Now is the time to lead this state back to the place where we can again be proud to say we are Oregonians who support education. Time is of the essence. please do it now.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Chairs Nolan and Schrader, Vice Chairs Carter and Nathanson, you are being left out, and the rest of you committee members, good evening and thank you for being here. My name is Chuck Kyle. I'm a parent of a high school student, a former small business owner, a former school board member, and a retired naval officer. I'd like to thank all of you for your service to our state and our communities. Our nation faces grave crises. Global climate change and international terrorism are the greatest challenges our country has faced in generations. The ultimate solutions to these problems are complex and will require resources and time and creative problem solving. The people who will ultimately deal with these problems and similar issues are our children. Our generation has helped produce these interrelated crises. Our dependence on fossil fuels underlies both. To successfully meet these challenges and solve these problems, the next generation will require many things: patience, intelligence, compassion, analytical skills, and an understanding of myriad facts and diverse opinions. The core for that generation is the education we provide them. The future leaders of our country, our state, and our communities are our children. They deserve and need the best possible education. The policymakers who will guide the future, the scientists who will ferret out solutions, the engineers and technicians who will implement projects, the public safety professionals who will protect us, and the soldiers, sailors, Marines, and airmen who will defend our country are all currently our children. They attend our schools and universities. We must provide them with the best possible K-12 school system with quality community colleges and excellent opportunities for higher education. I encourage you to fully fund all the public education systems in Oregon. Arguments for increased efficiency in public schools are sometimes made as an alternative to increased funding. As a former school board member, I can assure you that our schools are run efficiently. The cuts we were forced to make in 2001 to 2005 were deep. There was no fat to cut. We cut only muscle and bone. Our state has come out of the recession of the 2001-05 biennium. I'll cut to the chase.
Thank you.
There's a lot of loopholes. One of them is my military pension. It's not taxed by the Oregon tax code. That was inadvertent by a previous legislature. Tax my pension.
Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you for your work on the budget so far. My name is Karen Lawless. I'm a parent in Medford. H.G. Wells said, "Human history becomes more and more a race between education and catastrophe. To avert economic and social catastrophe in Oregon, we must invest in education, from Head Start all the way on up. For the first time this decade, K-12 schools in Oregon have a chance to decrease their shameful class sizes and increase their too-short school year. But we don't have to shortchange college funding to do it. Where will the money come from? First, we need fair and meaningful tax reform. What benefit has Oregon reaped from our next to last in the nation corporate tax rank? It's time to take action on the proposals from even some of you members, which would increase and stabilize funding for health, safety, and education. Another possibility is to rein in costly prison building. Oregon has one of the fastest growing prison systems in the country. Even though over-reliance on incarceration is less effective in reducing crime compared to investing in good education and a strong economy. For example, the United States has by far the highest incarceration rate in the world, but our crime rate is no better than in other industrialized countries. What if we shifted future prison building funds to, say, music teachers? We'd see dropout rates improve, along with math, reading, creativity, motor skills, problem solving, memory, immune system, social skills, SAT scores. They'd all improve with more music education. These benefits are particularly manifest in low socioeconomic kids, the ones most likely to otherwise end up in prison. We should be investing in more programs with benefits like that, not building ever more prisons and clinging to unfair tax breaks. We're one of the few states requiring teachers to get a master's degree, and we put the quality education model in our state constitution. We've demonstrated that we value education in theory. Let's show that we value it in reality. Please consider raising the corporate minimum tax. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. The next panel would come forward, and then I will invite to be on deck Ed Alcantar, Bernie Binder, Ashley Cox, and Fred Smith. Please begin.
Good evening. I want to thank you for traveling here to Medford tonight to accept comment from the public on your proposed budget. This is particularly commendable after the many hours I know you've worked, stretching limited dollars and making difficult trade-offs in an effort to produce a comprehensive budget that you know will ultimately be criticized by someone. You folks have a tough job, and I commend you for your service, dedication, and particularly for coming directly to the communities to hear our views. My name is Toby Freeman. I'm the regional community manager for Pacific Power. I'm based in Klamath Falls, and after being in town for only 6 months, I've quickly seen the tremendous value that Oregon Tech brings to the community. Students, staff, and faculty are active and involved, and the university offers hope and opportunity to young people throughout the basin and this great state of Oregon. The Oregon Institute of Technology is a unique environment for higher education, with a mission to fill a real-world market need. Oregon Tech is uniquely positioned to play an important role in Oregon's future, helping offset the current and anticipated shortage of health professionals. One of the things I've learned since moving to Klamath Falls is this is a fiercely independent and self-reliant community. I think that is clearly demonstrated by the fact that OIT's campaign committee has already raised a sizable amount from the private sector for the second phase of the Center for Health Professions, including support from the Pacific Core Foundation. I'm proud to say that during my first week on the job, I had the opportunity to present...
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Can you wrap up, please?
I can. As I'm sure you know, Martha Ann Dow, OIT's president, is at OHSU right now for personal reasons. Knowing that, I still half expected to see her here tonight. She cares about the future of her university and her community that much.
Yes.
While I recognize this is a lot to ask, please reconsider the funding request for OIT and don't miss this opportunity to play a proactive role in partnership with private industry in the Klamath Basin community to help assure Oregon's healthcare future.
Thank you. Sir.
Chairs Nolan and Schrader, good evening. Thank you for being here. Members of the committee, my name is Edwin Chapman. I'm chairman of the board of the Rogue Valley Transportation District, and I don't think I have to explain to any of you how important transportation is, if only to get to all of the places that people have been telling you about tonight. I have several issues. The Oregon Transit Association and the Rogue Valley Transportation District urges the legislature to increase state funds for elderly and disabled funding. We presently operate on a state contribution of 2 cents for the cigarette tax. You may remember Senator Jane Cease was responsible for that over 20 years ago. It hasn't changed since then. The E&D programs are hugely popular and oversubscribed. With our aging population, they will only become more so. We've asked for a 3 cent cigarette tax increase, and we need all of your help to get us that funding. Secondly, we urgently need capital match funds for federal dollars to buy new buses. Without local match funds, those federal dollars go somewhere else. We don't get our buses. It's a good deal. A few dollars here brings in more dollars from there. Finally, and this may seem strange coming from Rogue Valley Transportation District in Medford, but we urge the committee to appropriate the lottery dollars for bonds for TriMet's light rail line into Clackamas County. The West Side light rail bonds have been retired. This is needed. I'm sure you've heard this elsewhere. I have documentation for everything I've brought up, but I believe you already have that from other people. We will see that you get more from us. I brought a staff member with more information, but I fear she won't get a chance to speak. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony and for your big picture outlook. Sir.
Thank you for being here. My name is Randy Schoen. I'm the Chief of Police for the Medford Police Department, and I'm on the Oregon Chiefs Legislative Committee. I'm here to talk about the proposed cuts to the governor's budget for DPSST funding. DPST, the academy, has over 30,000 public safety customers, and they include police, fire, corrections, dispatchers, and private security. We all depend on the academy to train new employees and to help maintain training levels of our existing employees. Over the past 3 years, we have worked with the governor and the Oregon's Legislative Assembly to create the new Public Safety Academy and build this academy as a place where all public safety first responders can learn and develop realistic scenario-based skills that can ensure their safety, enhance community safety, and to meet the service needs of our communities. Vital programs were not included in the recently released co-chair's budget. The instructor development program that develops and maintains academy instructors was eliminated. The proposed co-chair's budget will force DPST to cut classes. The proposed budget will only allow DPST to deliver 6 16-week basic police classes and 6 basic correction classes a year. This will result in backlogs up to 500 police and corrections officers needing basic training, resulting in long delays to fill openings. Ongoing maintenance training will be difficult to deliver. The proposed cuts will set public safety and DPST up for failure as they will not be able to meet the state's public safety training needs. We know the funding is an issue, and over the years, we have worked with the Assembly to establish dedicated funding for sources such as criminal fine assessment account and the fire insurance premium tax as primary revenue sources for this program. John F. Kennedy once said there are risks and costs to a program of action, but they are far less than the long-range risk and costs of comfortable inaction. The long-range risk and cost of cuts to public safety and training may be measured in lives lost. On behalf of the Oregon Chiefs Association, the Fire Chiefs and State Sheriffs Association, we urge you to not make these cuts and to restore the governor's budget. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Sir.
My name is Blaine Allen. I'm a major crime detective with the Oregon State Police. I've been there 23 years. What I'm here for tonight is to express upon you, every member of the state police's desire for dedicated funding. We know you're working on it. I know there's been a lot of different proposals. I wouldn't want to be the one wrestling with it. It's going to have to be you folks. But we need to do something. When I transferred to Medford from the Gold Beach office in 1989, we had 36 uniformed state troopers in Medford. Today we have 9. We almost have 8. We about lost one this morning. He called for help at 7 o'clock this morning. His closest help was 25 minutes away. We lost a bad guy. We saved a trooper, and we scored 22 pounds of dope this morning. That's cost-effective, and we'd like to keep our own people alive as well as everybody else's. It's important to us that we find dedicated funding. It's getting more difficult for us to compete with other police agencies in hiring good people. They're hard to find for everybody, whether it's us, Medford, the sheriff's office. So we're all fighting for the same guys or same girls. When we don't have dedicated funding, these people come to us and they'll pass us by because they're afraid of getting laid off. They're afraid of what their paychecks will look like. They're afraid of a lot of things. When they can go to a city or a county and make more money, and they know they're going to be there in 25 years. It's not just the hiring of the people, it's the retaining of the people as well. Dedicated funding would assist us in doing that. There are a lot of people out there that go through their whole lives and wonder if they ever made a difference. Policemen don't have that problem. We know we've made a difference. We're simply asking that you think through the dedicated funding issues, come up with a solution, and help us take care of business. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If the next panel would come up, I'm going to call the last panel then, which will include Dwight Long, Ellis Feinstein, Richard Snedley, and Jim Hutchins. Please.
Honorable co-chairs.
Scooch it up. Pull that mic really close.
Members of the committee. My name is Bernie Binder, and I'm here to advocate for those persons with a mental illness. I'm a member of the National Alliance for Mental Illness, and I'm also the father of a 37-year-old son who has been diagnosed with a severe and persistent mental illness 15 years ago in Jackson County. And over the years, I have seen in the services continuously reduced funding, but at the same time, the patient load has increased. And I want to impress upon you to reverse this trend. I want to thank you at the same time that you have indeed recognized the critical need of housing for those with a mental illness. And as you well know, people with a mental illness are ill-equipped to speak for themselves. So therefore, it's up to us to advocate for those. Other needs that exist that are not filled here in Southern Oregon is a mental health court. There's no funding to establish a mental health court. I would like to ask you to put that on your agenda. And of course, you recognize that criminal court system is certainly inadequate to deal with those with a mental illness. As a second issue is the continuous cuts in emergency services. Our son has been turned away when he was in critical need because there was simply no room. And similar needs exist in extended services and also in support of deployment. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And before the next person speaks, I would like to remind people that the members of the committee will read any written testimony that you would like to submit. If we don't get a chance to hear your spoken testimony, please give us your written testimony either tonight or through the web link that we've provided in the handout. The committee works in subcommittee, and they will pour through all the information they have available so that you will make sure that it is heard. Please, sir.
Good evening, Representative Mary Nolan and Senator Kurt Schrader, and the rest of the members of the committee. My name is Manuel Pacheco, Jr. I want to thank you for the opportunity to address you this evening. A couple of years ago, as a student at Rogue Community College, I stood before you in the state capitol asking for your help in getting a joint Rogue Community College Southern Oregon University funded and for appropriating funds to get programs reinstated for our students. Today, a couple of years later, it's my sad duty again to stand before you asking you to return the budget level to $9 million for regional institutions. A change in culture, greater emphasis on lifelong learning, and recognition of the importance of continually updating skills will lead to many more mature students wanting to return to higher education or to enter it for the first time. This will be true of those seeking part-time study as much as full-time undergraduates. Our universities and colleges must be ready to respond to these new demands. I implore this committee to stop the dismantling of higher education. Students are the future. We are the people who will someday be replacing you and many others in the jobs you do. I would hope you would like us to be as educated as possible. Shouldn't education be affordable and accessible to all citizens? I am of Native American descent, a single parent raising my 14-year-old daughter, and a first-generation low-income college student with a learning disability. Despite these circumstances and with the help of student support programs, I am an honor student at Southern Oregon University. I have also recently obtained employment with Rogue Community College as a part-time faculty member with the Bright Futures program. Without having access to higher education and the student support programs such as the Success at Southern program, none of this would have been possible for me. Thank you for your time in this matter.
Thank you and congratulations. Good luck. Yes.
Dear Senator Schrader and Representative Nolan and ladies and gentlemen of the committee, my name is Ashley Cox. I'm a current medical student at Oregon Institute of Technology. I am especially appreciative of your opportunity, of giving me the opportunity of speaking to you this evening. OIT is the official health science school of Oregon, and if you want a bachelor's degree in the medical field, OIT is definitely the place to pursue that desire. With that said, they say the chain is only as strong as its weakest link. If you are one of, if one of OIT's programs is unable to provide the highest quality of education that its reputation is based on due to a lack of a finished building and equipment, the institution as a whole will suffer for it. If this proverb has merit, the test of time has proven it so. It's fair to say that Oregon Tech suffers, then all of Oregon's higher education system will suffer along with it. This problem could potentially affect larger issues within the state, such as employment, healthcare, and other Oregonian economy. Originally, what seemed to be the burden of a small university is now being shouldered by the entire state. Perhaps I'm being overly dramatic. However, it's not the size of the link, but the length of the chain that matters. In providing the funding for the completion of our building and for the required equipment, the weakest link of this chain can be reinforced. Not only will health-related majors here at Oregon Tech will be able to blossom, but all majors and the campus in its entirety will be able to grow and expand. Senator Schrader, Representative Nolan, and members of the committee, the integrity of this chain rests in your hands. Again, thank you for your time and understanding.
Very well done. Thank you.
Good evening, co-chairs. My name is Fred Smith. I am the president of Klamath Community College in Klamath Falls, Oregon. I appreciate the time you're giving me here this evening. You're being handed out a document right now, and I will explain that to you here in a moment. But the first thing I'd like to do is, because I am a partner with OIT, my institution, anything that hurts OIT basically hurts us. And so we support wholeheartedly their efforts to create their Allied Health Center, and they support us with our development of our campus. We work, sometimes we are the fiercest of adversaries, but more times than not, we are the strongest of allies. And that's what you get when you're in a small town, you have to work together. Now, everybody knows what I'm going to ask for here today. That's pretty simple. But what I wanted to show you was what you're going to get. All right, I'm going to give you a little inside look at my organization through two documents. The first one is from my work session with my board on March the 15th, and it talks about tuition. What are we going to do with tuition at Klamath Community College based on how much money we get? At the governor's budget, I went to my board and said, let us freeze. Let us hold everything stationary. And if we are so fortunate as to get the $529 million that was requested by the state board, we need to have a hard discussion about rolling tuition back. We want to be the first community college in the state to roll tuition back. Enough. Enough. It has to end somewhere, ladies and gentlemen. Let it end at Klamath. Let it end at Klamath. We need to have the capital. We need to build a campus, guys. I'm sorry. We're the newest campus on the state. My brother calls me the president of Costco U because all we have are steel buildings that are painted a nice sand color. I tell my brother, God, I'd love to have the money of Costco, but I don't. So we do as hard as we go, as hard as we can, as lean as we can. And because we're so lean, we can make this promise to you. If you can give me $429, I'll give you a rollback in tuition. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. As the last panel is approaching, I'll just let you know that tonight, those who've testified and those who've testified out loud have joined a total of over 400 Oregon citizens who we've listened to this week and last week. And those of you who are submitting written testimony will join another 300 people who've submitted written testimony, that all will be considered as we make these decisions. Thank you. Thank you for your input. Sir.
I would like to ask for permission to speak on behalf of Ellis Feinstein, who had to leave. I am speaking to the same issue as well.
On behalf of?
Ellis Feinstein.
Fine.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Mark Stanislavski. I'm the president and CEO of Southern Oregon Public Television. I'm here to ask for your full support of the governor's CHAMP proposal, Senate Bill 994 and 995. In addition to revitalizing Oregon's arts, culture, and historical preservation, these bills provide $3.75 million to support the transition to digital broadcasting in 2009 for Southern Oregon Public Television and Oregon Public Broadcasting. I want to stress that this is support for infrastructure, not for programming. We obtain programming support from our members and viewers who support us. And I want to thank you for coming to Southern Oregon for this hearing. As you know, this is a very mountainous region, and you had to travel great distances to get here. This is one of the things that makes serving this state so expensive and so complex. Because of the mountains, public broadcasting has only been in the Rogue Valley for about 30 years. That was 20 years after it was in the Willamette Valley. So we've been catching up. Thanks to the lottery bond support that the 2001 legislature enacted, Southern Oregon Public Television was able to use these funds to attract matching support from the federal government. That enabled us, both OPB and Southern Oregon Public Television, to meet the federal mandate to begin digital broadcasting, and we did. Now there's a new urgency to the situation. Congress has mandated the end of analog broadcasting on February 17, 2009. That's a mere 676 days away. And I doubt that anybody would be surprised if more than five people in this room actually knew that fact, that analog television is going to turn off at that point. Now, we've made our transistors, our transmitters digital, but we are asking for support for translators that serve the rural communities. I'll have a handout for you, but I also have a graphic here which shows you an immutable law of physics, which is television signals do not go through mountains. And that is what we need translators for. This is also a great opportunity for the state to realize our ability to provide amber alert and emergency warning, including alerting people who live on the coast about potential tsunamis and other emergency services. We also use our technology to provide distance education as well as economic opportunity. In fact, we use a considerable amount of our airtime to help support Umpqua Community College and RCC with telecourses down here in Southern Oregon.
Thank you, Mr. Stanislavski.
And so we see that as an important partnership. I also want to show you...
Sir, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Please do submit your written testimony, though, for us.
My name is Dwight Long, and I want to thank you all for this opportunity to speak. The council methods of the New York Iroquois Federation are the basis for the republic style of our governance that we have. Our founding fathers recognized the value of their methods. Common among Native American tribes is a practice of looking ahead seven generations when making decisions. I believe the state should adopt this practice of looking into the future in decision making, particularly in relation to natural resources. I'm a member of the Klamath Watershed Council and want to let you know that council work is very effective at watershed enhancement. Across the state, thousands of people volunteer on projects. I urge you to fully fund OWEB. My concern is that OWEB Measure 66 lottery funds, which were approved by Oregon voters, have been raided to fund other activities. 60% of OWEB funds for non-capital activities are no longer available. Basic council support, monitoring, and building community support have all suffered as a result. I urge you to, once again, fully fund OWEB activities. Thank you.
You have support in the back. Thank you. Yes.
Yes, I'm Richard Snurley. Thank you all for coming. I am a member of the National Association for Mental Illness. I am a co-vice president on the board of directors for our mental health drop-in center in Grants Pass, and I'm employed, currently employed by Stepping Stone as a direct care staff, toileting, bathing, and even administering medications. I have a master's degree and started at $8.56 an hour. So you can see that I chose a career for the money, for the income. We really thank you for considering prevention, because I think you're all aware that one way or another it's going to come out of the budget. You're either going to pay for an ounce of prevention for supportive services, or you're going to pay for a pound and maybe a ton of either for crisis or for critical care services, either law enforcement or in the hospital. So we hope you will keep in mind, which I'm sure you are, that it's going to come out of the budget at one point or another. And hopefully we can find not cut the mental health budget at the current rate that is intended to try to support those supportive services and raise the wages. I worked when we had the Josephine County Mental Health, I was a mental health tech working for $9.56 an hour, and it hadn't been raised since 1997. I work as a personal care assistant, and the wages are $8.56 an hour and hasn't been raised since I've started in probably, I don't know, at least 10 plus years ago. So, but it's just not wages. It's all of the supportive services. And we would have more money to pay the judges. We'd have more money to pay the policemen and the doctors if we didn't have to pay so much for the crisis and that. So thank you very much for coming. All right, and the last thing we'd want is another self-support for mental health taxpayer or someone eventually empower them to be and accept some of your awesome, incredible tasks on the as the budget committee.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well done. Let's bring it home.
Thanks, committee members, for persevering and allowing us to speak. My name is Jim Hutchins. I'm program manager for Oregon Stewardship, which works from K through 12 and into the college level, teaching resource stewardship. We cover a 5-county area, and none of my students would be surprised tonight that I'm going to speak about hatcheries, preserving that hatchery funding. And they would also be remiss and really disappointed if I didn't give a passionate plea to support education. Support higher education, K through 12, keep the arts and music. We really need that program. I want to be able, as I mentor SOU kids, tell them with pride that you're in the right place, it's affordable, and this is where we want you. And then Mr. Thorndike is going to hire you someday, perhaps, or not. Okay, now to hatcheries. I guess I represent fish. I also represent those folks in Gold Beach, in Port Orford, Elk River's on the front page. I work with Pacific High School students. We've adopted a portion of that beautiful river, okay? Those folks depend on hatchery and wild fish. That's part of the economy. That's the reason we go down and try to catch a fin clip fish so we can keep it if we wish to. One of my students penned this at fifth grade. We were at the Elk River Bridge. It was muddy. And she said, "Beneath the surface of the river is a highway traveled not by cars, but by fish. There's room for a lot of hatchery fish there. Please fully fund the hatchery program." Thank you.
Well done. Thank you. Thank you all for listening, for giving us your opinions, showing us your passion, and helping us make good decisions. We're adjourned.